Usually when we talk about a developer closing their laptop for the day, there's this expectation of finality,
Well,
right?
absolutely. You clock out, you push your commits, and you shut the lid.
Exactly. The code just sits there in the repository, waiting in this frozen state.
Right. The traditional development cycle is completely static once that lid closes. It's just in stasis until you physically return to the keyboard the next morning.
But then, you step into the world of autonomous agents, and suddenly that closed laptop is a total illusion.
Yeah, it really is.
We're looking at a development landscape that is, well, it's alive. It is actively working while you sleep. So, welcome to today's deep dive.
And a massive shout out to all the developers and the popular atools.ai audience joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's a crazy time right now.
It really is. I mean, we're sitting here in mid-April 2026, and the way we interact with AI coding tools just fundamentally changed.
Calling it a watershed moment almost feels like an understatement at this point.
Seriously. What dropped on April 14th wasn't just some minor quality of life update. I mean, it completely redefined the boundaries of the local coding environment.
We basically went from tools that require constant hand-holding to systems that manage their own time, right?
Spot on. They manage time entirely on their own now.
And we have a phenomenal stack of sources driving our exploration today to help you navigate this. We're pulling from a really hands-on YouTube breakdown by Nate Herc over at the AI Automation channel.
That was a great video.
Really good. And we've also got an incredibly comprehensive written guide by Wayne McDonald from popularatools.ai, plus, of course, the official Anthropic Claude Code documentation.
Which is pretty dense, but super important.
For sure. So our mission today is to map out these brand new scheduling capabilities. We're going to break down the three distinct tiers of automation that just launched.
And we'll explore the practical use cases, plus highlight those hidden gotchas.
Yes, the gotchas. So you can start building 247 autonomous agents today, without completely tearing your hair out.
Because the learning curve here is steep if you just go in blind.
Oh, I bet.
Understanding the underlying architecture of these new tools is literally the difference between a highly efficient workflow and, well, a runaway process that drains your entire API budget in an hour.
Okay, let's unpack this. Before we get into the technical weeds of cloud configurations and API tokens, we really need to establish why scheduling is such a massive leap forward.
Right, we have to look at the paradigm shift.
Exactly. We are moving from a reactive tool to a proactive agent.
Think about the old coding assistant model. I mean, an assistant is incredibly smart, but it's fundamentally idle, you know?
Right, it's just waiting.
Yeah, it's waiting for a human prompt. You have to actively ask it to review a pull request or find a bug or summarize changes.
But the new coding agent model, it acts on its own at the right time without being prompted.
Exactly. It actively observes the environment and decides when to engage.
We really need to contrast this with traditional deterministic automation too, like standard cron jobs or basic shell scripts.
Oh, yeah, the classic stuff.
Right. If you write a traditional bash script to automate a deployment, it's basically like putting a train on a track.
That's a great analogy.
It's super efficient, it goes exactly where you tell it to go, and it does it fast. But if there is a rock on the tracks, like an unexpected API change or a weird merge conflict, that train derails completely.
It stops dead.
Exactly. It just waits for a human to come clear the tracks.
But that off-road capability is the defining feature of this new agentic model. When Claude Code's automation hits that exact same rock on the tracks mid-run, it doesn't just crash and throw a stack trace into the void.
Thank goodness.
Right? It actually reads the error. It uses its reasoning engine to self-heal. It adapts the code, tries an alternative approach, and basically executes a bypass.
So it's an off-road vehicle. It sees the obstacle, steers around it, and still gets to the destination without needing you to, grab the steering wheel.
Yeah, and that autonomy is precisely why the Popular Atools Guide calls these updates 10x more powerful than static scripts.
Wow, 10x.
Because we are no longer automating just the typing of the code. We're automating the reasoning process and the error recovery logic itself.
That is wild. But to fully appreciate the massive cloud features that just dropped, we first have to understand how Claude handles time and scheduling locally on your own machine.
Right, the groundwork.
Yeah, so tier one is the CLI command slash loop.
The slash loop command is basically your entry point. It runs directly inside your current terminal session.
Okay.
But the crucial characteristic here is that it is session scoped, meaning the moment you close your terminal or your IDE, the loop just terminates.
So it's for like temporary stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's designed for quick temporary polling. You give it a fixed interval, like slash loop, 5 meter check the deploy status. It just runs in the background of that specific session.
The really cool part, though, is the dynamic self-pacing mode.
Oh, I love this feature.
It's so smart. If you just type slash loop check the deploy status without giving it a time interval, Claude actually observes the project and chooses its own polling interval.
Right. It reads the room.
Yeah. It might check every 60 seconds if it sees an active build running, but if the project goes quiet and no files are changing, it dynamically stretches that interval out to, like, 20 or 30 minutes to save resources.
And there is a very specific mathematical reason you need to pay attention to those intervals, actually.
Oh.
Which brings us to prompt cache optimization. Anthropic's Claude API uses a 5-minute cache time to live. So 300 seconds.
Oh, wow. Okay. Let's do the math on that because it's a huge deal for your wallet.
It's huge.
If you schedule a loop for exactly 300 seconds, you are basically the unluckiest developer in the world.
You really are.
The cache expires literally a millisecond before the agent checks in again, meaning you pay the full token price every single time without getting any of the discount benefit.
Yeah, it's a brutal trap. The popular A-Tools guide points out two strategic optimizations here.
What do they recommend?
Well, if you're setting a fixed loop for active monitoring, keep your intervals under 270 seconds.
Okay, to stay safely inside the 5-minute window.
Exactly. That ensures you are consistently hitting a warm cache, which drops your token costs by up to 90%.
90% is massive.
Right. Alternatively, if the project is totally idle, you just stretch that interval beyond 1,200 seconds, so 20 minutes.
Okay, wait, but then you lose the cache entirely.
You do.
Yeah.
At that point, yes, the cache drops and you pay the full cost. But mathematically, polling once every 20 minutes at full price is way cheaper than pinging a warm cache constantly when literally nothing is happening.
Okay, yeah, that makes total sense when you break it down. Now, there's another layer to tier one. If you just type slash loop with no prompt at all, it triggers the built-in maintenance behavior.
Right.
But how does it know what maintenance actually means for your specific project?
That is handled by a special file called loop.md. You just drop loop.md into your root directory to functionally program the agent's idle behavior.
Oh, so it reads that when it's bored.
Basically, yeah. It tells the system, hey, while I'm not giving you direct commands, go look at these specific log files, run these linters, or, you know, hunt for memory leaks.
Okay, I have to push back here a little bit.
Sure, go ahead.
If slash loop just dies when I close my terminal, isn't that just a glorified while true bash script? I mean, why wouldn't I just write a script that pings my server every 5 minutes?
I get that a lot, actually. But here's the difference. A simple bash script cannot actively babysit a complex workflow.
What do you mean?
Well, a mechanical script can tell you that a unit test failed.
No.
But Claude's built-in maintenance feature, guided by that loop.nd file, it will see the failed test, read the log, navigate the repository to find the faulty logic, write a fix, and push a commit to resolve it.
Wait, all on its own?
All of it. All while you are tabbed out answering emails or something. It's doing cognitive labor, not just pinging an endpoint.
Fair point. Cognitive labor versus mechanical polling. That is a huge distinction.
Yeah, it changes everything.
So that's tier one. Now, tier two steps it up to desktop scheduled tasks. And these actually survive a computer restart, right?
They do. And they use a completely different configuration file called skill.md.
Okay, so loop.md is for idle time, and skill.md is for schedules.
Spun on. While loop dictates idle behavior, skill.md acts as the trigger mechanism for your local cron jobs. The configuration is stored locally, but this tier still fundamentally requires your physical hardware to be powered on and awake.
Which introduces a massive gotcha you have to watch out for.
Oh, the catch-up bug.
Yes. Let's say you use skill.md to set up a desktop task that runs a massive dependency audit every morning at 9 a.m., but it's Saturday, and your laptop is just asleep in your backpack all day.
I think I know exactly where this is going.
When you finally open your laptop at 11 p.m. to, you know, just watch a movie, the operating system wakes up. Claude Code checks its internal ledger, realizes it missed the 9 a.m. task, and immediately fires it off.
It just dumps it all on you at once.
Yes. Suddenly, your fans are spinning up, and your machine is churning through a massive audit right when you just wanted to open Netflix.
It's the worst. And that is exactly why you absolutely must write time guards into your prompts.
Time guards? Okay, how do those work?
You have to explicitly code the boundaries. You basically tell the agent, only execute this audit if the local time is before 5 p.m. Otherwise, log a skipped execution and exit.
Ah, so you have to protect the agent from its own diligence.
Exactly. You have to put a leash on it, which honestly perfectly transitions us to the centerpiece of this entire update.
Let's hear it.
Locateers are incredibly useful, but they still tether the automation to your hardware.
Right. And what happens when you close your laptop, fly to a beach, and have zero internet connection?
Your local agents are dead in the water.
Exactly. Which brings us to tier three, cloud routines.
And cloud routines are a whole different beast.
Yeah.
They run entirely on Anthropic's managed infrastructure.
And the hardware specs allocated for each of your runs are pretty robust, right?
Very robust. You get four vCPUs, 16 gigabytes of RAM, and 30 gigabytes of disk space per run.
That is basically a mid-tier MacBook Pro spinning up out of the ether every time a task is triggered.
Exactly. Your physical laptop can be at the bottom of the ocean, and your agent will still execute the workload perfectly.
That is amazing. So there are three main ways to trigger these cloud routines. First, standard scheduled triggers using natural language.
Like run a security sweep daily at midnight.
Right. Though it's worth noting the minimum interval in the cloud is 1 hour, so you aren't doing minute-by-minute polling here.
Yeah, they don't want you spamming the servers.
Makes sense. Second, you have API triggers, which give you a dedicated HTTP POST endpoint.
These are great. You can have your Sentry error logs or your PagerDuty alerts fire a webhook directly to Claude, waking it up to triage a live production bug the exact moment it happens.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting. The third trigger type is GitHub webhooks.
Oh, this is the big one.
It requires installing the Claude GitHub app, but it means your routine can be triggered the exact second a pull request is opened, or code is pushed to main, or a new issue is created.
It is the ultimate superpower for a developer.
It really is.
And to understand why it's a superpower, we have to look at the mechanism of how Anthropic actually handles the webhook behind the scenes.
Walk us through it.
Every time a cloud routine fires, Anthropic spins up a completely fresh, isolated container. It clones your GitHub repository into that container. It reads a file called clieed.md to understand the overarching system context and instructions.
Okay.
Then it executes its assigned task, pushes any new code it wrote, and then completely destroys the container and the clone.
It's like that movie Memento or Edge of Tomorrow.
Yes.
We are basically sending a newborn clone into the world. It wakes up with total amnesia, looks around, reads the Claude.md tattoos on its arm to understand its entire existence and mission, does the job, and then immediately evaporates.
That analogy is surprisingly accurate, actually. Nate Herc's YouTube video framed this using the Watt framework. Workflows, agents,
The
tools.
Watt framework. Okay.
Yeah, normally when you export an automation to a cloud function, you strip away the intelligence and just send a dumb script, right?
Right.
But this cloud architecture keeps the entire agentic brain intact. It has its CLI tools, it understands the workflow, and it uses its reasoning engine to pivot if things go wrong.
But because we are dealing with a newborn amnesiac clone every single time, every assumption you make about your local development environment is going to break your automations.
Oh, absolutely. Things get messy fast.
So, welcome to the Cloud Survival Guide. We have seven major gotchas that will absolutely bite you if you aren't prepared for the cloud migration.
Everyone trips over these at least once.
Let's start with number one, environment variables.
Well, on your local machine, Claude seamlessly reads your .in file to get your API keys right.
Yeah, standard practice.
But your .in file should always be in your .beginner. It never goes to GitHub. So when the cloud routine clones your repo, it has literally no keys. It is completely locked out of any external services.
Nate Herc shared a hilariously frustrating anecdote about exactly this.
I felt his pain on that one.
Right. He set up a routine to fetch YouTube comments using the YouTube API, and it just kept failing. He realized he had to go into the cloud environment settings in the Anthropic dashboard and securely inject the API key.
Which is the right way to do it?
But even then, it failed. He actually had to update his system prompt to explicitly tell Claude, use the injected environment variable, do not look for a .env file.
That's
The
crazy.
agent was so used to local development, it got confused hunting for a file that didn't exist.
That is such a classic AI hallucination moment.
Gotcha.
Gotcha number two is related to the API triggered routines.
Okay, what's that one?
When you generate that HTTP POST endpoint, the system hands you a bearer token for authentication. But that token is shown to you exactly once. Yeah, there is no reveal token button in the dashboard later. If you don't copy it into your secret manager right then and there, you have to delete the entire routine and start over from scratch.
Brutal, but you know, standard security practice.
Very true.
All right, gotcha number three, network access levels. By default, your cloud routine runs in a trusted network mode.
Yes, this tripped up a lot of early testers.
Nate Herc tried to have his routine send a summary message to his ClickUp board, and it completely failed until he went into the settings and toggled the network access to full.
And it's crucial to understand why Anthropic defaults to trusted mode in the first place.
Why is that?
It's all about preventing server-side request forgery, or SSRF.
Okay.
If an autonomous agent is reading untrusted text like, say, random comments on a public GitHub PR, a bad actor could theoretically use prompt injection to trick the agent into pinging malicious domains or probing internal network endpoints.
Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. So the trusted mode sandboxes the agent, restricting it to a verified, known safe list of APIs like AWS, Google, or Anthropic's own servers. You only toggle it to full if you absolutely trust the inputs the agent is processing.
That makes total sense from a security standpoint. Gotcha number four is what we call the browser automation trap.
This one is painful for web scrapers.
Definitely. A lot of developers use tools like Playwright or Puppeteer to automate actions on websites that don't have public APIs. Nate tried to port a script that posts updates to a school community.
And let me guess, it worked locally, but not in the cloud.
Exactly. It worked beautifully locally, but died in the cloud. Why? Because the cloud clone has no persistent browser state.
Right, no cookies?
No local cookies at all. It can't log in. If your automation relies on your local browser's authentication state, you have to completely rewrite it to handle headless authentication from scratch.
Which is a huge headache.
Yeah.
And gotcha number five ties directly back to your Memento analogy earlier. The Kiloday.md token drain.
The token drain.
Remember, every time a routine fires, it has to read the clelog.md file to understand the project.
Right, it's reading its tattoos.
Exactly. Now, if you have a massive 5,000-word context file detailing the entire history of your monolithic code base, that routine is eating a massive chunk of your API token budget every single hour, just to read the instructions before it even does any real work.
Oh man, that adds up so fast.
It does. The best practice here is to create lean, highly specific repositories just for your routines with minimal context files.
Smart. Okay, we already covered gotcha number six, the desktop catch-up behavior, where the agent fires missed tasks the second you open your laptop.
Right, the Netflix interrupter.
Exactly. Which brings us to the final gotcha number seven, strict branch restrictions.
Think about the blast radius of an autonomous coding agent.
It's terrifying if it goes wrong.
It really is. By default, Anthropic enforces a strict sandbox in the cloud. These routines can only push commits to branches that start with the prefix Claude slash.
Which is a brilliant safety net, honestly. You really don't want an AI hallucinating a fix and pushing code straight to your main production branch while you're asleep.
Precisely. If you tell the agent to push to main or open a PR from a different branch name, it will just fail silently in the cloud.
Until you fix the prefix.
Exactly. Until you either follow the prefix rule or manually tweak the repository settings to allow unrestricted pushes, which, by the way, you should do with extreme caution.
Oh, absolutely. So what does this all mean for how we communicate with the system? We are sending a newborn amnesiac clone into a sandbox every hour. How do we keep it from just, you know, spinning its wheels?
This raises an important question about prompt engineering for stateless agents.
Okay.
Because you cannot use the conversational style you use locally. You need highly specific, one-shot prompts. You need explicit success and failure criteria.
Like giving it a strict checklist.
Exactly. You have to write prompts with tight guardrails.
Yeah.
Like, review this PR for SQL injection vulnerabilities only. Create draft comments. If there are no new issues found, exit immediately and do not attempt to refactor the code.
So if we have these incredibly powerful, boundary-respecting prompts running in the cloud and they are triggered by GitHub webhooks, well, it begs an obvious question.
I know you're going to ask.
Someone listening is definitely asking, don't we already have GitHub Actions for this?
It's the right question to ask, for sure. But it misunderstands the fundamental difference in capability here.
How so?
GitHub Actions are for deterministic CI/CD pipelines. They handle the mechanical labor, building the application, running the predefined unit tests, packaging the container, deploying to staging.
The predictable stuff.
Right. But cloud routines are for tasks that require intelligence and reasoning. They handle the cognitive labor.
So you don't replace your GitHub Actions with routines. You combine them to create this incredible pipeline.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the modern workflow is about layering AI reasoning on top of your existing mechanical infrastructure.
Give me an example of how that looks.
Okay, so your GitHub Action runs the test suite, and flags an error. Instead of a developer having to wake up to fix it, that failure triggers a webhook to your Claude routine.
Oh, wow.
The agent wakes up, reads the stack trace from the action, hunts down the logical bug in the code base, and opens a new draft PR with a proposed fix.
That is just incredible. And looking at the Wayne McDonald guide, they highlight some amazing practical automations you can set up today.
There are some really clever ones out there.
Yeah, like on the local desktop side, a morning briefing. Every weekday at 8:30 a.m., your local skill.md triggers Claude to read your unread Slack mentions, check the status of overnight PRs, and basically generate a prioritized text summary on your desktop before you even touch your keyboard.
That's a massive time saver. And for the cloud side, I think the most impactful use case is the PR code review triggered via the GitHub webhook.
Oh, definitely.
The exact second a junior developer opens a pull request, the agent reads the intent, checks for security flaws, and leaves contextual line-by-line comments before a human senior engineer even has to look at it.
It's essentially adding a highly diligent, slightly amnesiac senior developer to your team who works for free. Well, not completely for free, I guess.
Definitely not for free.
Right, which brings us to the limits and the actual costs. This uses your normal Claude subscription, but these cloud routines are strictly capped per day.
You really have to watch those caps.
Yeah. If you're on the pro plan, you get 5 routine runs a day. The max plan gets you 15, and team or enterprise tiers get you 25.
And those limits are critical to keep in mind, especially if you're experimenting with hourly scheduled triggers.
Oh, yeah, you'll burn through that.
You will literally burn through 5 runs by lunchtime and be locked out for the rest of the day. Nate Herc strongly advises that you should never just write a prompt, schedule it, and walk away.
Test it first, people.
Always test it. You must always use the Run Now button in the dashboard to test a routine manually first. Watch the containers spin up, read the output logs, correct the agent's false assumptions, and only let it run autonomously once you know the prompt is rock solid.
Measure twice, automate once. Well, that covers the entire landscape of Claude Code's new scheduling capabilities. From local slash loop commands to cloud-based webhooks, the Watt framework is officially out there and ready to be built upon.
It's going to be wild to see what people build with this.
Truly. But looking at everything we've discussed today, it leaves you with a final lingering thought. If your coding agent is now automatically triaging sentry bugs, reviewing pull requests, and pushing fixes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, while your laptop is closed and you are fast asleep, are you really still a developer in the traditional sense?
That's the real question.
Or have you just been promoted to the manager of a digital engineering team?